I would start from the two dots on the top of Kufiyu Demet Aleph. The Gemara begins with a case. Haushtaro Dauktiv Beishnin Stama. There was a contract that had written in it Shnin years without any stipulation about how many years. Now, we're going to see in a second, it was a contract that was an issue between a Malve and a Love, and the Shtar was a Mashkanta Desura. Right, we're going to see in a second, Mashkanta Desura is where the Malve gets the usage of the land, gets the perut of the land for a fixed duration, and then the land returns to the Love, and the loan is terminated at that point in time. So now, the Mashkanta Desura, which the duration is unclear of what the Mashkanta Desura is, because it only says in the contract, Shnin, says years. So Malve Amar Shalosh, Love Amar Shtaim. So the Malve says, I have it, the rights to it for 3 years, and the Love says you only have rights to it for 2 years. Now, both of them are practical, or they both could be true, because the word Shnin is in plural, but so the minimum is two, but it could be more. But then, Kadim Malve V'chlinu Lepere. Before they come to court, or before the Lovir brings the case before us, the Malvir has already been there for 3 years, and he's eaten the payroll for the 3 years. Mi Ne'amun. Who's believed in this case? Who has the Ne'amunut? Is it the Malvir or the Lovir? Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Karka Bechezket Bale Kaima. Rabbi Yehuda says, we follow the land. Who has the Chazaka on the land? The Chazaka on the land is the Lovir, right? It's his land. Therefore, since he has the chazak on the land, we assume the land is in his possession, unless you can prove otherwise. So therefore, the loveh will be believed over here, or the loveh's position will dictate. Rav Kahana Amar, Perot, Bechazkat Ochlehen Kaime. We go after the consumer of the Perot, meaning that whoever eats the Perot, whoever ate the Perot in this instance, right, he is the one who is Mukhzak, and if he's the one who's Mukhzak, then the other party has a motzi mechaver lavaraya. So over here, the malve is the one who has possession of mukzak in the perot, and since he's mukzak in the perot, will demand of the love to prove that he doesn't belong, or the 3 years did not belong to the malve. Gemara says vehilchata kavate the Rav Kahana. The law is like Rav Kahana that says damar perot bechazkat oklehim, that over here, what dictates is the fact that the malveh already consumed the perot. And since he consumed the perot, he's considered to be muhzak in the perot. If he's muhzak in the perot, then the loveh will have to bring a raya that he wasn't entitled to eat the perot for those 3 years. The Gemara says, v'hakai malon. We just saw this in the Gemara a number of times. We saw this a couple of daf ago. The hilchoto, kavote, the Rav Nachman. That the land always is in possession of the owner, or the true owner of the land. That was in the case, if you remember before, where they had a dispute about when it came to the leap year. Does it belong to the socher or to the maskir? And there we had the machlokes, right, between Rav and Shmuel. And then Rav Nachman came along and says that the safek was already nolad before all this started. Why? Because the chazakah of the karka is what dictates, and chazkat karka is always with the maskir. And therefore, he gets the benefit of the debtor, the raya, always has to be brought by the socher. Gemara says, so why do we, and since we paskan like Rav Nachman, bedine, and we know Rav Nachman says that karka bechazkat paleo medit, yet over here we're paskaning against that position, going like Rav Kahana. It says the difference. Hatam milta d'lo avida legluyehi. The safek in the previous Gemara where Rav Nachman paskins and the safek over here are different. The safek in the case that Rav Nachman paskins is a safek that will never be clarified. It's impossible for us to know. Meaning that the argument or the question is when you say, I'm going to rent it for the year at this and this much for per month. So we're unsure of whether Tfos Lashon Rishon or Tfos Lashon Achron. But that is a subject or the question there, the Safek there is in the Halacha. Since the Safek is in the Halacha, it's something that will never be determined. Hacha, in our case of here, Milta Davide Legluyahi. Here, it's simply the Safek is in the facts, meaning that it's something that can be clarified in the end. If the Edim show up, we have a Shtar. At the end, if the Edim show up, we can ask the Edim, what was the word Shnin, or how many years was it? So eventually, we will be able to determine. I mean, there is such a possibility of coming to a conclusion in this case. Because here, the argument is simply about the facts, or the differences about the facts. And therefore, there are people who know the true facts. In the case before, by the case of the leap year, it's not a question of the facts. It's a question of the halakha. What's the halakha in that case? And that will be something that never can be, you know, ad shivo eliyahu, that's something that we'll never know. So therefore, betruche beidina trezimna lo meterachinan. We don't bother Beis Din to do things twice. Why? Because if Beis Din at this point takes the fruit away from the malveh and hands it to the loveh, then the Edim show up and said that the document said 3 years. That means Beis Din's going to have to go again and take the fruit away from the loveh and bring it back to the malveh. So we're not going to have Beis Din twice have to move the peirot back and forth. We say leave things the way they are right now. And if Edim show up in the end, they tell us that the din is otherwise fine, then we'll deal with it then. But we're not going to have Beis Din at this point go after the Cheska Takarka and give it to the loveh only to find out later that they have to move it back to the malveh. We'd rather have them move it once when the facts are clear, not have to move it twice because now we have Cheska Takarka only to find out later on that the facts are the opposite of Cheska Takarka. So that's the difference in the cases, and therefore we come to a different conclusion based on that. What, that the shtar itself should have, the fact that it doesn't say anything? Right. Although here, I mean, it has to be, see, the fact that it's three does not undermine the fact that it says shnin in the karko. I mean, you're right. If we have to come to the when we look at the shtar and there's a safek about what the wording of the shtar shnin means, then we'll go with the minimum amount and we'll say it's two. On the other hand, here, right, that's exactly it. Here, the malveh is making a claim that's three, and three could be read into the shtar just as well as two. And the Gemara you're referring to, Shaul, is actually back on Chav Amud Bet. There, the Gemara wants to know by Machriz, when it comes to Achrazim, if you found a shtarot kruchim, found a bunch of shtarot that are tied together, what does the finder of the Mitziah, what is he Machriz? So the Gemara says, Shtarei Machriz. And he says that he found a number of shtarot. So the Gemara says then, it's only a simon if he tells you that there are three shtarot there. If he tells you shtu shtarot are there, then that's already a given from the statement that he made. Shtarei, the minimum for a plural shtarei is two. So therefore, only when he says three is it meaningful. Only then is it a siman, because then it's clearly giving you information that he doesn't know from the hachrazah, that he doesn't know from the information that you gave through the announcement of what you found. So again, this is what I think I answered you, Shaul, but that the answer is that, yes, true, the plural, when you say shtarei, the minimum is two. So it's over here, shnin, the minimum is two, but that doesn't mean that it is two, it could be even more. So over there too, when he says shtarei, the minimum is two, right? But if he says three, then it's clear that's a simon, right? Because if it was two and he says two, then he knows from the information given, he could have guessed that there was two. Three already becomes new information. He's providing new information to the case over. All right. I mean, that's partly why there's no problem with ribit over here, right? It's because he's taking the risk. And number two is that it's also in the height, it's wiping out the loan. So there is repayment here. But there is risk in the repayment scheme. So since he's not guaranteed, therefore there's no problem of ribit by the mashkanta de surah. All right. The next case. Malvo Mer. Chamesh, Lofe Omer Shalosh. Okay, it's an independent case over here. Not a case of what we were talking about before, but here where they come to din. Malva and Lofe come to the din, you know, come to court, and the Malva says that I have this land for 5 years as a mashkon, and the Lofe says that you only get it for 3 years, and you've already eaten your 3 years. Samalei, Aitili Shtarech. So he says, bring out your shtar. Where's the shtar mashkanta? Show it us. Amalei Shtara Irkisli. The Malveh says that the shtar was lost. It got ripped up. So Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, Malveh Neman. The Malveh is believed over here. Migo, because there's a Migo. De'i bayamar lukucha hi biyadi. He could have said he purchased it. He ate it for 3 years. And we know that 3 years is the minimum or is enough to be considered a chazakah on the land. So now he could have come and make a claim and said, I bought the land. The reason I don't have a shtar is because I already ate there for 3 years. So the shtar is gone. The fact that he doesn't make such a claim makes him believable that he's saying that the mashkanta was for 5 years and I lost the shtar. But that is a fair claim. So Amalei Rav Popo, Rav Ashi, Rav Zvid, Rav Avira, Lo Sfira Lu Had Rav Yehuda. Rav Zvid and Rav Avira don't agree with this position of Yehuda that we say amigo over here. My time, Hai Shtara, Kevin de Luguvaina Koi. This shtar, what's the point of the shtar that he's holding over here? It's for collection. Mizar Zayir Bey. He would be careful with it. Umichbashu de Kavshe de Shtare. And therefore he's clearly hiding the shtar. Meaning that Rashi explains over here that this din in Bava Batra, right, from Chizkat to Batim, we're going to come up soon too. It's a nice beginning, a little feeling for the upcoming Bava Batra. But the value or the ability to use 3 years as a chazakah in place of a shtar is only in a case where we say that with the person doesn't, we don't expect him to hold on to the shtar forever. I mean, that if he buys something, if he's a mecher and he buys something, we say, okay, after 3 years and nobody's made any claim against him for being there, he doesn't have, he's not going to be so careful about the shtar anymore. We don't expect him to keep his shtar the olam. But that's true because it's a shtar mecher. On the other hand, over here, where the shtar or the purpose of the shtar is for guvaina, is for collection, then the malveh knows without this shtar, there's no way he collects his money. You can't say, 3 years, anything like that. The malveh will always be careful with the shtar because otherwise he knows he's never going to collect his loan. So if he's not going to be able to collect his loan, he's not going to let the shtar go. As opposed to by a mecher, where he says, look, nobody came in the first 3 years. I don't have to worry so much. Then he lets it go. He's not so careful with the shtar. So the use of the 3 years of a chazakah is only true when you're talking about a shtar that the individual would let go or basically not worry about anymore. But if by a shtar guvaina, a shtar that's a creditor shtar that's used for collection, it's clear there that they would not give up the shtar. And therefore, shnei chazakah won't apply. If you know shnei chazakah won't apply, you'll be careful with the shtar. So the fact is that this creditor has the shtar, and he's not showing us the shtar because he knows the truth is that it says 3 years in it. He's holding onto the shtar, basically, because he knows if he's kovesh the shtar, he'll get 5 years. So therefore, there is no migo over here. Savar, ochla tartin shnin. He says, Yeterta, I'll eat it for 2 extra years by not showing the shtar. So, Amarle Ravina the Ravashi, Elamiata. According to Rav Yehuda over here, that there's a Migo, Hai Mashkanta Dusura. So, what is this? Mashkanta Dusura, Tichtive Hachi, that it says like this in the Mashkanta Shura, Mishlem Shnea Elain, Tipokara Da Balokesif. The end of the period of time that this is the Mashkon, it will, the land will be returned to the Loveh. Without any payment from the loveh. Basically, the loan will be complete, and they will revert back to the loveh, and the malveh will have no rights to the land anymore. Hecha de kavshe l'shtar mashkanta. So now what happens if the malveh, in these cases, hides the shtar? V'amar l'kucha hi biyadi, hachinami de mehemen. So then you're going to say he's believed. That means anybody who is in a position of shtar of a... Right, of Mashkanta Dusura. Truthfully, it could be true of any Mashkon or any time a person has possession of the land. Tosos at the bottom says it was just that happened to be the case, or this is where it was clear to the question was clear. But with Mashkanta Dusura, the case would be that he eats there for 3 years and he says, you know what? Instead of selling the shtar and saying, listen, here's the shtar guvaino, he just says, I bought it from you, no more shtar, and he can keep the land because he ate there for 3 years. When it says, if that's the case, according to Rav Yehuda, you can have a case here where the Chachamim allowed for such a situation where the Loveh could lose everything. Right? Because there's a Migo. If there's a Migo, then the Malveh is believed. That means that the Malveh is holding tremendous power over here with the Shtar Guvaina when it comes to Mashkanta Desura. Because he can basically say, right? That means that he has a choice now. He can either say, I bought it, or he can say, I don't have the shtar, and I belong here for 10 years. I mean that we're giving way too much power to the malveh because he now has the ability to either keep the land forever or make a statement that the land or how long the mashkon is, and he'll be believed. So it says no. Amalei hotam takinu le rabbanon demare aro yahiv tasko v'kari kariyo. No, in our case over here, in the case of the mashkanta, so we're in the case where the malveh has possession of the land. We have something that the Lovesh shows or makes a statement of ownership over the land. How does he make a statement of ownership of the land? He pays the taxes and he fixes the border on the land. So his paying of the taxes and fixing the border is a clear indication of his ownership over the land. And if it's ownership of the land, then the Malveh can never make a claim of Lekucha Hibiyadi because... Right, if it was the kuchahu biyado, he would be paying the taxes. The fact that he's not paying the taxes is a clear indication that it belongs to the levet. Ara delet le karya v'lo yivtaska mai, a land that doesn't normally pay taxes, a tax-free zone, and it doesn't require the charitz, doesn't require the border around the property, then how does the levet make an indication or demonstrate his ownership? He has to say something. He has to stand up and say, you don't belong here. Or he has to make a statement. This is a mashkon within the 3-year period. Loim chomai. If he does not object to the malveh being there, I mean, not object in the sense that you don't belong there. I mean, that we would thought, and this is what the questioner's consideration was, that mecha'a only applies to gezel, where he stole the land. Then you could say, you don't belong here. But by mashkon, he does belong there. The malveh does belong there. So maybe there can't be a mecha over there. The answer of the Gemara is no. That imcha, that he was required, if he is, right, that's his loss. That he has to also have a mecha when it comes to mashkon. He has to say that this is a mashkon within the 3-year period. Every 3-year period, he must state that this, or make a public statement, that this is a mashkon. If he does not demonstrate some sort of ownership, then he must say something in that period of time. If he doesn't say something, then it's his own fault, and it's his own loss. It's not the takanat chachamim that's causing the problem. It's the lack of the lovez mecha that's causing the problem, and he lost it on his own. All right, next case. Aris omer lemechtza. The Aris says the agreement is, the sharecropper says the agreement is that I get 50%. The Balabayit says that I gave you a third to go work. Mi neman. Who's believed? Rav Yehuda amar Balabayit neman. The owner is believed. Rav Nachman kol kumin haga midina. Nachman says it depends on the business practices or the norms in that area. Sover mina lo plige. The Gemara says we had a havmi to say that they don't argue. How about you to shakla risa pago? How about you to shakla risa tilta? Right, that it has to do with the fact that how much the aris takes in those cities. In Rabbi Huda's city, the aris used to take a third. And that's why Rabbi Huda says that the balabait is neman, is believed in that case. Not that he believes that the balabait is always neman, but just because it happened to be that the minag midina there was 50%. Rabbi Nachman says, minag midina, meaning a third, because in his area they had a third. So Mer says, how about you the sukkah risa paga? How about you the sukkah risa tilta? So Amalu Rav Mimari bra de bat Shmuel. So we bumped into Rav Mimari a couple of times here in Boba Metzia. Remember again that we mentioned before that his father was, right, a ger. And therefore the Gemara always calls him after the daughter of Shmuel because his father, Issa Guria, who was his father, converted. But after Horato, so Horato shlo b'ktusha, but he was not led b'ktusha. So therefore the Gemara always calls him after bra de bat Shmuel. Even if the business norm or the practice is that 50% is the thing, pligiba rabiuda. Rabiuda argues. Zamar balabayit neman. The balabayit is believe. Dibi amar schiriv lekitehu. Because it's amigo. He basically has amigo. The amigo is that he could say, you are my laborer. You're a day worker. He could deny the fact that this individual is an aris. He could just say that I hired you to work over the season, and I'm going to pay you like a laborer. You're not entitled to be an aris at all. So the fact that he could have said he's a laborer, and he says he is aris, again, he's ne'aman. So this is similar to what Rav Yehuda said above, just like the malveh has a migo, right? So too over here, the balabayit has a migo. So therefore, in the case, we thought possibly that Rav Yehuda says balabayit ne'aman was only in a place where the norms were a third. Gemara says, no. Even a place where the norms are a 50%. Nevertheless, Rav Yehuda says a third, we believe the Baal Bayit, because he has amigo. He has amigo that he could deny the entire Arisut. And since he could have denied the whole Arisut, then we say that when he tells us what the percentage of the Aris is, then we believe him, because that is the amigo over here. All right, next case. Yitomim omrim anu hishbachnu. All right, so they say, we improved the property. The Balchov, the creditor, says that your father improved the property. Now, why does it make a difference? Because a Balchov is allowed to collect from Karko because it was already Meshubad to him prior to the father's death. What the creditor is not allowed to do is take anything from the Yatomim. That means Metaltalim, which were not Meshubad to him. Therefore, he can't take them from the Yatomim. And also Shevach. If there's improvement in the land after the death of the father, the Baal Chov doesn't have a right to that because he doesn't have a shibud on that shevach. That is, it belongs to the Yitomim. So the Yitomim omrim anu ishbachnu, we did it after our father's death, and therefore you have no entitlement to it. The Baal Chov says, no, your father did it, and therefore it was meshubad to me prior to his death. Ami lahavi raya. Who is the burden of proof on over here? So, Sava Rabbi Chanina Lameimar, Rabbi Chanina thought to say, Ara Bechezkat Yitamei Kaima, right, that the land is in the possession of the Yatmei. So, just like we said before, according to Rav Nachman, right, that we go after the Chezkat HaKarka. So, Chezkat HaKarka here is with the Yitomim. And if the Chezkat HaKarka is with the Yitomim, then the burden of proof is going to be at the Bachov with the creditor to show that the Shevach was there prior to the death of the father. Bachov Lavi Raya. Amalu Hausabo. So one underly gentleman said to him, "Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan." Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with you and says otherwise. Yitomim lavi raya. The burden of proof is on the yitomim. Why? Kaven to the guvaina kaima, command the gave damya. Basically, because the same reason that the karko is collectible by the bachov after the death of the individual, because it was mishubad to him prior to the death of the father. So too over here, right? Since the karko is part of the guvaina, part of the collection, if it's a part of the collection over here, then the burden of proof is on the yitomim, because the shevach is a part of the karko, and when he takes it, now the burden of proof will lay yitomim levi raya. Samar Abaye, so Abaye says, afanan nami tanina, we have a Mishnah that supports this position, a Mishnah in Baba Batra. So safek zekadam, safek zekadam. So you have a case where you have a tree outside of the city, outside the walls of the city, and we're going to see in the Gemara and Baba Batra that there was a space that had to be left empty around the city, that left fallow, and this tree is in violation of that area where it should be clear, or it should be a field. So now, who can they cut the tree down? Well, it depends. Was the tree there before the city was built? Or was the tree planted after the city was built? Well, if the tree is planted after the city is built, then the tree was planted in violation. It was planted bisur, and therefore you can cut it down. On the other hand, if the tree was planted or was there prior to the building of the city, then there's like a grandfather clause, right? The tree is already there before the city is built, and therefore it does not need to be cut down. Nevertheless, the Mishnah in Baba Batra says, Savek zekadam v'savek zekadam. If we're not sure which way it goes, kotzeitz, we cut it down, ve'eno noten damim, and you don't pay money. Ayalma, why? Because what the conclusion of the Mishnah, or what's the din over there? The din is, if the tree came after the city, you cut the tree down, and the individual who owns the tree gets no compensation, because the tree was planted illegally. On the other hand, if the tree was planted, or was there, pre-existed the city, then you know what the din is? The din is, you cut the tree down, and you have to compensate him. So what is the halacha? The common denominator on both positions is that we always cut the tree down. We cut down the tree, whether the tree has a right to be there or not to be there. The only question is, do we compensate the individual whose tree it is? So what does that show you? It shows you that the safek is not about whether we do cut or we don't cut. The safek is simply about the compensation. Therefore, what happens in a case where there's a safek? We're not sure if the tree was there first or the city is there first. So if what do we do for sure? We cut the tree down. Because whether you are justified in having the tree there or not, We always cut the tree. So Sota over here, we cut the tree. Now what do we have? We have a safek, whether the owner of the tree is entitled to compensation. So when it comes to safek mamon, hamotzi mechavero alav araya. So over there, we're going to say that the owner of the tree has got to prove that he's entitled to the money. So despite the fact that the safek is novea miakarka, it's novea from the karka, whether the tree, you know, meaning the tree, is it planted in the ground? And the question is, who has the chazaka here? Nevertheless, we ignore the chazaka of the karka. Why? Because we're going to cut the tree no matter what. So if we're going to cut the tree no matter what, that takes the safek away from the karka and makes it into a safek mamon. So that's the same thing in our case. That's what the bai is suggesting. It says, afa nami nitmina, safek zekadam, safek zekadam. If we have a question as whether the tree or the city was first, kotzeitz, we cut it down, ve'eno notein damim, and he doesn't compensate. We don't compensate the owner of the tree. Alma, came into the mikatz kaime, since the tree is going to be cut in either case, amrinle aiteraya b'shakol oshkom, to bring a proof, and you get your money. Hachanami, our case over here, too. Hai shtara, came into the guvaina kaime, meaning that since the shtar entitles the Baal Chov here to collect from this karka, the karka is meshubad to him from the lifetime of the father, therefore, kaman degav yadami, it's as if he's taken possession of the land already. So the question is no longer about the land anymore, but rather about, right, the Yitomim trying to extract the Shevach back from the Baal Chov. Yitomim levi raya. Right, so the, and then the obligation, the burden of the proof is going to be on the Yitomim. Aitu yatmei raya, if they bring a proof, the inu ashbuchu, right, that they have to bring a raya, right, that they were the ones who improved the land. So based on this, right, the land is going to the Baal Chov no matter what, right? Because he's entitled to it. The land is mishubad to him. So land is going to the Baal Chov. The only question we have is whether he has to compensate the Yitomim for the Shevach. So then it becomes a monetary issue. A monetary issue, then it's right, the one who wants to take it away. The land's in the possession of the Baal Chov. Now we have Shevach. Question is, does he have to repay the Yitomim for the Shevach? Then the burden of proof is going to lay with the Yitomim. That's the same case as the Gemara in Baba Batra with the tree and the city. Once the tree is cut, the question is no longer about what yes do we cut, no do we cut, or don't we cut, but rather about whether he gets compensated. If it's a question about the compensation, then the one who wants to get compensated has got to be the raya. So it's over here, the Yitomim, who want to get their money out, they have to bring a raya. So now, when he pays the money here, when he compensates with the money, Sava Rabbi Chanina LeMeimar, Ki Misalkin in Lehu, Ba'ara Misalkin in Lehu. When we remove the Yitomim, or when the Yitomim, we have to pay them off with the Shevach, we pay them with a portion of the land. And that they can demand a slice of the land for their Shevach. Velohi, that's not the din. B'dzmei misalkin in lehu. He can pay them off with money. That the Baal Chov, or the creditor here, has the right to keep the land and then compensate them with cash. Midrav Rav Nachman, from the position, from the halacha that we know from Rav Nachman, Damar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, Shlosha Shamim Lahem et HaShevach U'malin Otam B'damim. There are three individuals or three cases in which we assess the value of the Shevach, and then we give that Shevach back in cash. They do not have to give or repay the Shevach in land, but rather in cash. Ve'elhein, what are those cases? Bechor the Pashut, Balchov, Uktubat Isha Le'itomim, that's number two, and Uvalchov Le'klukuchot. So what are each of those cases? Bechor the Pashut, what's the case of a Bechor? Bechor is entitled in inheritance to a double portion. But when he is entitled to a double portion, that's only davar shem muchzak, that he already has, as soon as the father dies, he's in possession of. But something that is ra'ui, that only will later come, meaning that comes after the fact, or only will eventually reach his possession, there he doesn't have a right to a double portion. So, for instance, what happens if the brothers invest in the property after the death of the father, and they improve the value of the property? So now, when it comes to the underlying property, the Bechor is entitled to two-thirds of the property. He gets two portions. The Pashut is only entitled to one-third of the karka of the land. On the other hand, when it comes to the Shevach, when it comes to the additional value that was added, they split that 50-50. He's entitled to only 50% of that. So now, when the Bechor comes, he's going to take two-thirds of the karka, and the Pashut is going to take one-third of the karka. So when he takes two-thirds of the karka, he's taking the karka plus the Shevach. He's taking too much Shevach. So now he has to repay that Shevach to the Pashut, to the other brother. When he repays that Shevach to the other brother, he can pay him out in cash. He does not have to give him karka. How much does he owe him? He owes him one-quarter, right? He owes him a quarter because he took two-thirds of the land, and he took two-thirds of the Shevach. He's really only entitled, right, to 50% of the land. Since that, the difference between 50% and 2/3 is 1/6. So once a quarter of 2/3 is 1/6. So he'll have to give back a quarter of his portion in cash to the other brother. All right, or the quarter, I'm sorry, the quarter of the 2/3 of the Shevach, you have to give back. The quarter of that portion of the Shevach, you have to give back, which is 1/6 of the Shevach, back to the other brother. That he can pay out in cash. That's the one case. The other case is Balchov, Ktudat Yishal Yitomim, which is our case here. Case where we have a creditor or a ktubah that's being claimed against the Yitomim. So over there, where the Isha or the Balchov, the creditor is entitled to take the land because there was a shibud on that land prior to the death of the individual, of the father. So therefore, they were really in possession of the land beforehand. If they take it and there's Shevach that was added after the death of the father, they can give that Shevach back. They have to give the Shevach back to the Yitomim, but when they give it back to the Yitomim, they can cash it out. They don't have to give them land. They can give them cash equivalent of the Shevach. And the last case is Balchov Lekuchot. It's a case where a Balchov is going and making a claim that my loan preceded your purchase of the land. So over there we said before that the Balchov is entitled to take it away from the Lekuchot. Now even though he's entitled to take it away from the Lekuchot, he doesn't, not necessarily entitled to the Shevach. If he's not entitled to the Shevach, he's got to pay them for the Shevach. So when he pays them for the Shevach, again, he can cash them out. And what the reason behind all of these cases, because Bikara Aradi Dehu. That's what Rashi says. In each of these cases, the land really belongs to this individual. The land is theirs. The land is Meshubad to all these individuals, and the Shevach was added on after the fact. So the land is really theirs, and the Shevach's really being placed on top. So since the land is really theirs, we say let them keep the land. They are entitled to the land. Now, okay, the Shevach, they got too much with the Shevach, they can cash that out. But the land itself belongs to them. So the Gemara says, so that's why Rabbi Chanina's Havamina to say that he has to pay the land, pay off the Yitomim with land is incorrect. Because we see from Rav Nachman that when it comes to Yitomim and a Balchov and a creditor, the creditor cashes out the Yitomim because the land is his. And when the land is his, he can cash out the Shevach and he can keep the land if he wants. So Amrlei Ravina the Ravashi. So based on this conclusion of Rav Nachman's statement, we said, the Memra, the Savar Shmuel, Balchov Lelukuchot, right, that when it comes to a Balchov Lelukuchot, that he pays Shevach, right? So the question over here is that we had a Machlokus between Rav and Shmuel earlier in the Masechta, right? Umi Itle Shivcha Lelukach. Since when is the Lokach entitled to any Shevach? Vahamar Shmuel, Balchov Guvet Shevach. That the creditor is entitled to take the entire karka plus the shevach. He keeps everything. Now, the lokeach can go back to the person who he bought the land from, meaning that he can go back to the, in this case it'll be the loveh, and claim from him, right, his yitziot. He can claim from him, again, he gets, sorry, over here, he'll take the yitziot. He'll take the amount that he expended. He'll get from the balchov. And then it'll go for the Shevach back to the original owner. But so there is, that's the way Tosos explains. I don't know if you remember this. There was a Rashi and Tosos over there back in the Gemara. But we'll explain here the way Tosos does back in the Gemara over there, which is that when the Lokeach comes and when the Balchov, the creditor, comes and takes it away from the buyer, he takes away the entire land and the Shevach, and he has to compensate the Lokeach for the expenditure that he outlaid to create the Shevach. He doesn't pay him for the Shevach, he has to pay him for the Yitziah. And then on top of that, that Shevach, the additional amount that the Lokeach is entitled to, he goes back to the Loveh, and he gets that money from the Loveh. That's the Pshita of Tosus. Rashi, on the other hand, seems to think that it was the Shevach, or the entire Shevach he keeps, and the Lokeach gets nothing from the Balchov over here, and he has to get everything back from the Loveh, which is much harder to understand over there. Josh, I don't know if you remember, you asked the question over there, and we spoke about Tosos's answer, being that the Lokeach over there is entitled to get his Yitziot from the Balchov. All right, so Amalei, so based on this, how do we solve the problem that Shmuel over here seems to indicate that there is an entitlement of Shevach to the Lokeach, whereas, based on Rav Nachman's statement, and whereas when it comes to back in what we saw earlier in the Masechta on Yudalid and other places, that Shmuel says that Bachob is Govet to Shevach. Where it says, V'chitei Malokash, if you want to suggest that there is no question over here, Kam B'Shevach HaMagia L'Ketfayim, Kam B'Shevach She'im Magia L'Ketfayim, Right? This we said both here in the Gemara here, also in the Gemara in Baba Kama, that the difference is whether what type of shevach we're talking about here, whether it's shevach ha-magil ha-ketfayim or ain't a magil ha-ketfayim. What is shevach ha-magil ha-ketfayim? So Rashi over here explains that it's tzrichim l'karko. It says a similar thing in the Gemara of Baba Asra and Baba Kama, which is that items that still need the land, anything that needs the land, that's shevach ha-magil ha-ketfayim. So anything that still needs the land is part of the land. And since it needs the land and it's part of the land, therefore the Baal Chov can take it because it's the land and the land is his. On the other hand, that if it's Eino, which is Ein Magila Ketfayim, doesn't reach the Ketfayim, meaning that it doesn't belong to the land anymore. The land is not necessary over here. In that case, it becomes like Peirot. And Peirot, the Baal Chov, the creditor, is not entitled to take Peirot. He's only entitled to take the Karka and the Shevach. So that's the way Rashi explains it. Explains what Magila Ketfayim is. And again, when we say Tzrich in the Karka, means Dover Muat, right? They have to have some connection to the land. It's not like that. They're obviously, if they're Mechuber the Karka, then we know that Kol Mechuber the Karka Kekarka Dami. So that's not the question over here, is that they are basically finished. They don't really need the Karka, but they still have some residual value for them being attached to the Karka. And that residual value makes it a Shevach Magila Ketfayim. Never the Baal Chov can take it. Whereas if they're totally separated, they become like Peirot and they won't get it. That's why Rashi explained Shevach Magila Ketfayim. On the other hand, Tosfot over there brings two Shitot. He brings one Shita and then the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam of what Shevach Magila Ketfayim is. Tosfos, the first Shita in Tosfos is that a shevach ha-magia the ketfayim is anything that the but can walk away from the karka. Meaning that anything that if shevach ha-magia the ketfayim kore davar shesofo litlosh, anything that in end will not stay with the land. It's shevach that is removable. Then magia the ketfayim means shevach that is not removable, that belongs to the karka. Now then shevach that is removable, that is something that does not belong to the land, and therefore the Baal Chov will have no claim on that. So the Tosfos says that Magiat Ketfayim is whether it belongs to, whether it's a part of the land, part and parcel of the land, or something that eventually can be separated or removed from the land. The Rabbeinu Tam says Shevach Ketfayim is Komar Davar Haba B'Torach. Right, so that the Rabbeinu Tam explains that Magiat Ketfayim depends on how we generated the Shevach, or how, right, how this Shevach came about over here. If the Shevach came from a heavy investment and work to get the Shevach, then we say that it's separate from the land. On the other hand, if it's either Shevach Mamela, right, that it went up in value, or some improvement that required expenditure but not a lot of effort in order to make the value, then that it's not. That's the Shevach that belongs to the land, because the real value is the land. It's just that you put money in and therefore the land increased. But if it requires additional Torah on your part, then that's Shevach that belongs to you, that's separate from the land, because the investment is not simply the money and then the karka is worth more, but it's rather your input and your doing work on it, right, is makes it into Shevach that is not necessarily a part and parcel of the land. All right, so now, based on that, all right, so the Gemara wants to suggest over here that the difference in the din of Shmuel has to do with what type of Shevach we're talking about here. If we're talking about Shevach HaMagila Ketfayim, if we're talking about Shevach that belongs to the land, in that case, Shmuel says that the Lokeach is not entitled to anything, and the Baal Chov, the creditor, keeps it, because it's part and parcel of the land. Either according to Rashi, because it's Tzrich L'Karka Mu'at, or according to the first answer of Tosfos, it's something that permanently remains with the land, or according to the Rabbeinu Tam, because it's something that, I guess I have to say, it's something that doesn't require a lot of Torah, I mean that it's simply the land that generated the value over here. So therefore, the Baal Chov, the creditor, can keep it. Kan, v'shevach she'en magil ketfayim. Shmuel over here, or the statement in our Gemara over here, where we say that there is shevach l'kuchot, we see that from Rav Nachman, the name of Shmuel, that there is shevach l'kuchot, that is in our case over here, where en magil ketfayim, where the shevach does not belong to the land. It's something that's separate. It's differentiated from the land. Va, the problem with that solution, that's why the Gemara says we can't use the solution, is va masim b'chol yom kamigvei Shmuel afil b'shevach ha-magila ketfayim. Then we know that we have daily cases, or this is an everyday occurrence, that Shmuel takes shevach, gives it to the kuchot, even b'shevach ha-magila ketfayim, even in cases where the shevach is part and parcel of the land. So that can't be the differentiation over here. So the Gemara says, lokasho, had the mesik be kishir ara b'shivcho, had the lo mesik be kishir ara b'shivcho. The difference is, what is the size of the loan? right? What is the size of the loan? If the loan is, the value of the loan is both, is equal to the land plus the shevach, then he's entitled to get the land and the shevach. Whereas if the size of the loan is less than the value of the land plus the shevach, then he's entitled to the land. Shirara, if it's lo mesik be shirara v'shivcha, then he keeps the land and he gives back the shevach. Gemara says, v'chi lo mesik shirara v'shivcha, di'ayv le'zuzay l'lokeach u'mesalik le. So their suggestion now is, if the loan value does not encompass both the land plus the excess, the shevach, then he pays him off. He takes the whole land with the shevach, and then he cashes him out on the shevach part of it. Gemara says, Hanicha the man damar, that goes well, or works well, according to one who says, I'it le zuzei lelokeach, lo matzi mesalik le debalcho. That works well, according to the one who says that when the creditor is taking the land, that the debtor does not have a right to say, I have cash, I want the land back. That works well. Ella, the man di amar, is le zuzei lelokeach, matzik mesalik le debalcho. Right, that when the debtor has cash, he can remove the credit over here. He can say, don't take the land, here's the cash. But namely, so then the debtor should be able to say in this instance, if I had cash, I could take you off this land. I could remove you from the land entirely. Here, when I don't have cash, at least give me, I'm entitled to the shevach. Now, the shevach, you could pay in cash. Okay, true. But if you pay me in cash, then I have cash. And if I have cash, I can stop you from taking the land. So now, I should be able to stop you from taking the portion of the land that I have cash for. And therefore, I'm entitled to a piece of land over here. What is the case over here? It's a case here is that the land or the collateralization of this land is not stam, that is a shibud on all the karkaot of the, that it was a general lien on all the possessions of the debtor, but rather this was directed collateral. So where he has directed collateral, then he becomes the de facto owner of the property. And if he's the de facto owner of the property, and that's what Rashi told us above, since he is the owner of the property, then the shevach that is added on there is really added on to his property. And since the shevach is added on to his property, then he can decide how he wants to pay out the shevach. The debtor has no rights over here because, again, he can't even, if he has cash, he can't take him off the land. Because, again, it's directed collateral. And it's as if he owns it from the beginning. It's as if the malveh already has taken his collection from this piece of land, and it's as if it belongs to him already. All right. Now, so new Mishnah. A makabel sade mechavero leshevua. Person accepts a land or a field from his friend for shvua. Shvua being here a 7-year cycle for a shemitah cycle. Echad b'sheva meod zuz. He does it for 700 zuz. Hashviit min aminyan. Then the person is entitled to keep the property for shviit. I mean, it's 700 zuz, indicating 100 zuz per year. Right, but the way they structured the loan, it was done for the entire Shavua, meaning 700 for the Shavua. Kabla himenu sheva shanim b'sheva meod zuz. If he takes it from him for 7 years for 700 zuz, then ein hashviit min aminyan. The shviit doesn't count, meaning that that year is not a good year, and he has to, again, number one, he doesn't pay him for the shviit year. And number two is that he could take another year. The 7th year will really be the 8th year where he can plant. And there's an additional year where he will pay for it. All right, now, the next case. All right, Tzchir Yom, Gova Kol HaLaila. Person who's hired to work, a day laborer, who's hired to work during the day, he is entitled to collect his compensation all night. And if he doesn't get his compensation that night, then the owner or the hirer is over a lav minatura. Schir Lailo, the one who, a night laborer, Gove Kaleon, who finishes his work by sunrise, he has the entire next day to collect his wages. Now, again, this will have a nafkamina for two different things. One thing is, when is the balabait over the isur of Baltalin, not keeping the schar sechir beyond the period of time where he owes it? That'll be the period of time that we just laid out. If he's a night laborer, he has the whole next day to pay it. And if he's a day laborer, he has the whole next night to pay it. The other din that it has relevance for is to the laborer himself. The laborer himself, we know that there is a takanat chachamim that nishba v'notel. that he's empowered to take a shvua and collect. Now he's Nemat. If he takes a shvua, he's Nishba v'notel. When is he Nemat to Nishba v'notel? If it's Tok Zmano. If it's within the time that he's entitled to collect his schar. So it has to be within that period of time when he's entitled to collect it. So it has to be, again, if it's a night laborer during the day, the following day. And if he's a day laborer, it's the following night. Schir sha'ot, someone who works by the hour, goveh kol ha'layla v'chol ha'yom. He collects all night and all day. Now, what seems to be that this schir sha'ot, he's a hourly worker. The hourly worker is working, for instance, during the day, and he continues into the beginning of the night. So his work is not the entire night, but he goes into the beginning of the night. So Rashi says, the way Rashi explains it here, since he already worked, right, very good. So since he already worked a portion of the night, right, then he already becomes, you can't say that you should pay him at sunrise because he's already now become a night worker. Right, that's the way he explains it. Tosa says, explains that Lina mashma kol ha'layla, right, that Lina, his implications are all night. And this schirut lo kein because he doesn't have all night to pay it. Meaning that if he was a schir yom, he's a day laborer, then the baal bayis is entitled to the whole night to pay. So over here, since he doesn't have the whole night to pay because he worked portion into the night, that can't be, there can't be no restriction over there. That's the way Tosfos learns. Schir shabbat, schir chodesh, schir shana. Someone's hired for a week, a month, or a year. Schir shavua is hired for a shemitah cycle. Yatza bayom, if he leaves during the daytime, goveh kol hayom. Then he's entitled to get paid that entire day. Yetzah b'layla, if he leaves at night, goveh kol ha'layla v'chol ha'yom. He gets that whole night plus the whole additional day. Right. Because he's a mekabel, but the only way an aris gets paid, right? The only way he's a choker here, or he's an aris. The only value to him of the property is the production of the property, right? Because it's a mekabel sadeh mechavero. It's not here where he's renting the property for any uses like the mishtecha peyre to put out peyrot. It's clear here that the reason that he's taking the property is to get utility out of the planting and the production of the property. So you can't say that any utility will suffice over here. So when he sells it as a block, so again, when the transaction, the agreement is for a Shavua, for a Shemitah cycle, then that's the 7 years is the Shemitah cycle for Shavua Me'ot Kesef, because that's what they agreed to. Whereas when he says it's a year-to-year structure, then the Shemitah year is not included because it's not, we would say it's not Muvla. You have to look at each year independently. It's clear that he wouldn't have purchased, or he wouldn't be paying for the Shemitah year. All right? All right, so Gemara says, Tara Banan. How do we know that a day laborer gets to collect all night? Talmud Lomar, lo talin pulat schiritcha ad haboker, right? That you're not allowed to leave the payment or the dues owed to the what is due to the laborer until the morning. Uminayin the schir laila shukuvak kol hayom. And how do you know that a night laborer is entitled to collect all day? Shneamar beyomo titen scharo, that you have to give him his due, his wages on the daytime. Where it says, wait a minute, how do you know one's talking about Tzchir Yom and Tzchir Laila? Ve'ema Ipcha. Just say the opposite. When it comes to the night laborer, right, why can't we say by the light laborer is like Lo Talim Pulat Tzchir Tchad Boker? Why can't we say you have to pay him right away? Right? And number two is, why don't we say about the Tzchir Yom, Be'yomo Titen Tzcharo, that you pay him on the day that he's working? Where it says, Tzchirut Eino Mishtalim Et Elbasof. It's clear that that can't be the case. Why? Because the schir is not entitled to his wages until the end of his work. So since he's not entitled to the wages until the end of the work, we can't demand of the baal bayit for a night laborer to him to pay at night. Meaning that he doesn't owe the money till the completion of the work. When he finishes the work, it's already basically going into the daytime. Right? It's basically the end of the night. We can't demand of him to pay immediately. Otherwise, or you know, immediately, or even when he comes to pay, it's going to be yom already. So since schirut eino mishtalim et elbasof, it's clear that the payment must be the next 12-hour cycle. Must be that the daytime is the payment for the Schir Laila, and the nighttime is the payment for the Schir Yom. And based on that, we'll read each pasuk to be relevant to each of those two. So Tan Rambanan, Mimashma Shenemar Lo Talin Pulat Schir Itcha, says, do not leave the Pulat Schir Itcha, any Odeya Shad HaBoker. I wouldn't have known it means until the morning. So why does the Torah have to tell us that only until morning? Why does it mean? I mean, if I know that you can't keep the Pulatz Chir with you, then what does the addition of Ad Boker teach you over here? Melamed Shein Over Ad El Ad Boker Rishon Bilvad. The violation of Lotalin is only in the first 12 hours. Right? That Lotalin Schir Ad Chad Boker, that is only for the first 12 hours. After that 12-hour period, you're no longer in violation of Lotalin. I mean, you already have violated it, but it's not persistent. I mean, that the Isur is now gone after that expires at once you reach Ad Boker. The question of Bayomo Titen Scharo, whether that only applies for one day or not, is a machlokas achronim, about whether we say the same thing over there. The Gemara says, Mikan Ve'elech, Mai, what about, so after the expiry of the Isur, is the Balabait in violation of anything? So Amarav, Over Mishum Bal Tisheh. There's a separate Isur of not withholding. That's a separate Isur. The Gemara says, Amar Yosef, Mai Kara. What's the Pasuk? What's the Isur? What is this Isur about Tisheh? Where do we have that from? So it's a Pasuk in Mishlei. Right, the Alto Marler Yachar Lech Veshov. They don't say to your friend, "Go and come back." Veshov Umachar Etin, and I'll give it to you tomorrow. V'yeshitcha, and you have it. You have the ability to pay today. Don't tell your friend to go and come back tomorrow when you have the ability to pay today. So that's the Yisur of Lotashah, that you're not allowed to hold on to the. You're not allowed to hold people over and to make sure that they don't pay. So based on that, obviously it's a remez because the case could be where he doesn't have cash to pay. So what are you going to say in a case where he doesn't have cash, he's not in violation of Lotashah? No. But the basic idea of the Pasuk of Mishlei is that you're not allowed to withhold wages from people. So that violation of Lotashah will take over when there is no Lotalin. So it'll be a separate Isur, but it won't be the Isur Doraisa. It'll be an Isur Derabanan that is a smachta from the Pasuk in Mishlei. It can't be an Isur Doraisa. Otherwise, why they bring a Pasuk from Mishlei for an Isur Doraisa? Only way they can bring a pasuk from Mishlei is a proof to an Isur Doraisa if it's a Gilui Milsa, if it's showing us the meaning of a word somewhere else. And that's clearly not what the pasuk here is doing. Here it's that the underlying Isur is being learned from the pasuk. Right, Tanu Rabbanan. Homer lechavero, tzeis chorli po'alim. Person who says to his agent, go out, or to another individual, contractor, go out and hire workers for me. Shnehem eno vim b'shum baltalin. Neither of them is in violation of the Isur of baltalin. Ze lefi shelo schachran, the owner, because he didn't hire the workers. And the hirer of the workers, no, because they don't work for him. Hey, dummy, what's the case over here? Then if the contractor goes out and says, I will pay you, that your scar is on me, then scaro alafu. Then the scar is on him. Person who hires a worker to work in his field and he works in his friend's field, notain lo scharo mishulam. He has to pay him in its entirety. Yes, he can go back to the Baal Bayit and take him what the benefit that he gave to him. Mar says, lo, tzricha da'amar lehu scharchem al Baal Habayit. No, that the contractor goes out and says that the scar is on the Baal Habayit. So basically, it's just an agent to say that the Baal Habayit will pay you. So in that case, neither of them can be held accountable for the Isur. One, because he didn't hire the workers, and the other one, because he, right, is not working. They're not working for this individual. So Yehuda Bar Meremar, Amar Le Shamei, that he used to say to his Eved, to his servant, Zil Agali Po'alim, go and hire for me, Po'alim, Ve'im Lehu Scharchem Al Balabayit, and say to them that the Schar is with the Balabayit in order to protect himself. That way he couldn't be in violation of Lotalin, because neither, again, it was the same case over here, that neither of them had both parts. Neither of them had the schir, they was the hirer plus the working for them. Meimar Marzutra agre the hadadi. Meimar Marzutra had a deal where each one of them would hire workers for the other in order to prevent the Isur of Lotalin from taking place. Amar Rabbi Rav Huna, Hana Shukai de Sura, the Balabata Musura, Lo Avde Mishum Baltalin. They are not in violation of Lotalin. Mide Yode, the Yoma de Shukas Miche. They know that they're not going to get paid. The workers, the Po'alim in the city of Surah, know that the Balabatim don't have cash to pay them. They only have cash on the Yom HaShuk. And therefore, it's an implicit tonight when they come to work that the workers are not going to get paid until the Yom HaShuk. But there will be an Isur of Baal Tisheh. If he waits past the Yom HaShuk day, then there will be a violation of Lo Tisheh. Okay, clearly there's no latalain because already the first day is going to pass and he doesn't have to pay them because the shuk day is further on and they agree to that. That's fine. But Baal Tisheh, there will be an Isur of Baal Tisheh in that case. The Rishonim, I won't get into, I just mentioned to you that the Rishonim have a disagreement if a worker works on Friday. When it comes to Friday afternoon that the worker is working, he stops working right before Shabbos. Is there a din of latalain? because he can't pay him. He can't pay him on Friday night. So is there an Isser of Lotalin or no Isser of Lotalin? So some Rishonim say no Isser of Lotalin. Other Rishonim say there may be an Isser of Lotalin on Motzei Shabbos. That only on Motzei Shabbos there will be an Isser of Lotalin onto Sunday for Lotalin. Okay, we'll stop over here. He worked on Friday till right before Shabbos. That's the first time he can pay him. So maybe that's only when the Isser of Lotalin will enter in that case. All right, have a good day.